Creative Male Aging, a radio and internet project in which we explore and challenge many of the conventions around aging and look particularly at new options for today's older men. I'm Tony Ryan. Welcome to the program. We begin today with project consultant Dr. John Ashfield, bringing together some of the issues we've raised throughout this 12-part radio series.
If we're talking about retirement, and we want that to have positive connotations rather than negative connotations. Because as I've said to you before, retirement is death if it's viewed in the usual manner. But if it's not to be death, if it's to be a time of creative ageing, then we need to see some continuity of those essential elements from the time of our lives when we're working and we're highly productive and we're stimulated and we're finding meaning in what we're doing, into a time where maybe, yes, we have to change our pace somewhat, but still those elements can and should be present. We talk a lot these days, or we hear a lot these days, about work-life balance. I'm not sure that that's a useful way of looking at how we should construct a healthy life. More, I think it's about a synergy of essential elements. And it's the synergy of essential elements that we can carry from the first part of our life into the second part of our life. What do those elements consist of? I think they consist of ensuring that we pay attention to our health and our relationships and the level of stress that we experience. But let me just set that aside for a moment and come back to it. What's also important to recognize about men is that our lives revolve around our projects. You know, we're a cause that needs to bring about an effect. We need to be creatively, physically involved in doing things that are of effect, that are conspicuous of our creative activity. And so our projects are important to us. They won't cease to be. And so a retirement that is characterized by creative aging is a retirement in which those projects are still important to us, still vitally central to our lives, because as men we tend to define ourselves by work, by our productive capacity. That's really important. Now, if we think of, you know, the healthy life in retirement as not so much this dichotomy of work-life balance, but one, as I say, of a synergy of elements, what are the elements? Let's go back to those. Well, you know, if you're going to be at your best for your projects, you need to take care of your health properly. You need to be physically active often. You need to experience vigorous physical exercise. You need to be eating well. You need to be sleeping well, engaging in proper sleep preparation. You need to be avoiding large amounts of alcohol. You need to be avoiding caffeine so that they don't disrupt your sleep architecture. You need to pay attention to your relationships. Yes, your relationships are important in their own right. But again, if you are not paying attention to your relationships, then there's this simmering, corrosive dissatisfaction that's happening in the background that is going to undermine your ability to pursue your projects, to approach life with vigor and enthusiasm. So it's about getting all of these things working for you. Your projects can remain central to your life and central to the way you define yourself, so long as they're supported by you paying attention to this synergy of elements, essential elements, which support good health.
South Australian author, educator and psychotherapist, Dr. John Ashfield. Professor Barry Golding has a strong interest in older men's learning, their sense of identity, and, as we've heard in earlier programs, he's a passionate advocate for the men's shed movement. Professor Barry Golding, what would your wish be for older men in later life?
I think that the things we're doing at the moment need to continue, but my plea would be for men before retirement age to get more advice and help about things other than superannuation. I think there's a myth that somehow all we need to retire is money or to know that you're going to be okay. Now, A, we know that the government can shift the goalposts and change the retirement age, or we may have an economy, as it's done in the past, where the economy falters and the superannuation earnings change and people have to go back to work. What I would hope for is that people are more prepared earlier in life, including pre-retirement, to actually do more stuff in their retirement. I've seen a lot of people, men and women, say, when I retire, I will. Research suggests that people will actually do less in their retirement unless they've actually done something before. And to expect people, you know, some people think they're going out onto this broad plain and they'll be able to do whatever they like. There's other people who only have a very fixed goal and they'll say, I'll drive around Australia or I'll have a holiday in Europe. But at some point, the holiday will finish. And we know that many people will live for another 25 years. We actually have to have a society where people are actually empowered at any stage in life to be part of the community. And we have to get professionals able to empower people at any stage in their life. It's so much simpler for people in aged care, for example, to actually suppress people's individuality. It's more efficient to dumb people down and to patronise them and to treat them like customers and clients and patients and to get them out of bed early so they can do the cleaning early and put them on a daily treadmill where the needs of the organisation come before the needs of the individual. But it's not just aged care, it's health service providers. It's people who are responsible for, and I think we have to get more people more politicised because it's a huge vote. You know, how many people have you seen a bumper sticker that says I am retired, I vote? Because in 20 years' time, you know, if you had a bumper sticker that said, I retire, I vote, you're actually half of the population. And if those people aren't treated with some dignity and respect by government and service providers, they could make life very nasty for service providers in a similar way to that students are actually complaining about what's happening with them at the moment. And so my argument would be, if we can't be radical in our later life, when can we be radical? So I actually think that many of the people who are now my age were born during the 70s, and we were quite a radical generation. And I think our generation will be in aged care and we will demand that they change what they do as customers and consumers. And I just think we're in for a very interesting and wild ride.
Professor Barry Golding from Federation University in Ballarat, Victoria. Secretary of the Men's Health Forum, Sydney-based Dr. Anthony Brown, contributed to our very first program. Here he reflects on the sharing of wisdom and the leaving of legacies, the wisdom of the elders.
In terms of feeling like you're making a contribution, what we all want to do is not just make a contribution, but feel that we've left a legacy. And I think that's true of men and women of all ages. Part of growing up and becoming wiser is realising that I have a role to pass on what I know. There still might be a lot more I have to learn, but it's passing on what I have to know, what I know, and leaving a legacy. And I think that's what wisdom is. It's the sharing of what we know and it's the giving of what we know, not just to the next generation, but to other people. And I think that's part of creativity as well. Creativity's around not just creating, but leaving something behind. So many of the men that I'd spoken to had created wonderful things, whether it's an elaborate wood carving or restoring some piece of antique machinery and having, you know, a tangible artifact to leave behind. But they'd also been involved in training. They'd learnt skills and they were passing those skills on to other people. Whether it was involved in helping organise the club that they're with so that there was an organisation that other people could come to and belong to keep that wisdom and that knowledge about that particular skill or that particular craft alive. So I really believe that that wisdom is there, and that we grow in wisdom and we grow in as people by sharing that with others as part of our legacy.
Dr. Anthony Brown. From Wagner College, Staten Island, New York, Dr. Miles Groth was in Australia back in 2011. From an interview I recorded at that time with him in Adelaide, he reflected on the sharing of wisdom, particularly through mentoring by older men of younger males.
With the absence of fathers in many situations, and more situations, 2 out of 3 families are single-parent families in the States, and that's the mom and the children or child. So my answer then would be what I'm trying to conceptualize in the broadest sense as mentorships. Perhaps we are called upon as older men to step in to the breach and be available as what I would call mentors to boys. And these don't have to be the traditional sorts of mentorships that you found among teachers, clinicians, rabbis, priests, pastors, coaches. But we're going to have to, I think, as a culture, and I mean that in the West, we're going to have to invent a new sort of relationship. It's not unknown. It was called mentorship based on this character in Greek mythology, Mentor, who was given the care of Odysseus's son when he went off to war. We're going to, in the absence of fathers, not away from war, but away as a result of divorce, perhaps, we're going to have to form some sort of institution in which men, perhaps 2 generations removed, will be able to work with and help and support these boys. They respond to us. They do respond to us. This I know. But again, you don't have to be a college professor or a clinician. You just have to be somebody who has lived through some years of experience and who has negotiated this path to manhood. And I think the baby boomer generation is a massive number of men. Maybe this is just a little bit of luck that there will be a lot of men who can step in at this point and act as mentors with these fatherless boys. And again, the fatherlessness might be as a result of their physical absence or their psychological and emotional absence from the home. So I would say, to answer the question, that we have to invent this new form of supporting boys to stand in and, we're inventing this new way of relating. It's old, but it's new to our culture.
You say that boys, young men, do actually respond when there is someone there like a mentor. So they're still wanting to respond to this offer.
They respond to us because they are sensitive to this deep understanding of them. Once you've made it clear to a boy that you're not afraid of his strong emotions and negative emotions, he's willing to form an alliance with you. The second thing, beyond not responding with fear to what could be a pretty scary look or a particular scary body language or a particularly scary history of things that he's done in the past with people, is to be able to convey to a boy that you're taking him seriously. I think that probably the most important element of effective psychotherapy, but I'd extend this to effective relationships, period, but especially effective relationships between mentors and boys, is that the boy understand that they're being taken seriously. Boys are very sensitive to this. They're very sensitive to being taken seriously. And this has a lot to do with the psychology of growing up male, which is quite different from the psychology of growing up female. So I would say that these two things, you have to have a genuine liking for your own being a male, to not be afraid of it in another human being, a younger one. And you have to, in the case of boys who require mentoring, indicate to them that you're taking them seriously. For the rest, you have to be able to listen, be patient, take a great deal of time for them to say a very little. And they don't have to say a lot. They don't have to go through long explanations of the motivations for their behavior. They want to get on with their lives, and they want to make this transition into manhood mostly, so that they can partner and perhaps have children and get on with doing something useful in life. Mentors, I think, working with boys from these perspectives, not being afraid of the male, taking the person seriously, and being patient for a long period of time when these guys are unable to formulate in words what's really bothering them.
Dr. Miles Groth, Professor of Psychology at Wagner College, Staten Island, New York. Dr. Groth is editor of New Male Studies, an online open access journal on men's health and well-being. The website is newmalestudies.com. That's newmalestudies.com. On the Community Radio Network around Australia, you're listening to Creative Male Ageing. Today, in this our final program, we're looking at some of the positive contributions that older men can make through continuing to work on projects and also in the sharing of their wisdom and experience. To end this program and the series, I spoke with the Honourable Zoe Bettison, MP, Minister for Ageing in South Australia. Minister, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Tony, and thank you for inviting me to talk with you today.
Minister, retirement is a major life transition for both men and women. As Minister for Ageing in South Australia, what do you see as a good retirement?
Well, one of the things about ageing is it's very individual. And I think we all have different experiences, different work-life balance experiences. Some people work very much defined who they were. Other people always had a good balance in their life where work obviously was important, but that might have been balanced out with the role they played at the local sporting club or the local community organisation. So I think when people become retired, it depends really how much that paid work particularly dominated their life. And I think it makes a big difference about how you perhaps transition into retirement, depending on your experiences leading up to that.
Some men, of course, face the prospect of early retirement because of redundancy, or in some cases because of the physical work they've done, and they're just not able to continue in that kind of work. What can be done to assist communities to recognise those challenges?
Look, I think that's particularly challenging. I mean, we have now this expectation that we'll work till we're 70. Now, my thing, and I guess, look, my one reason of entering Parliament and my interest in politics is about economic participation and participation for all South Australians, backed up by a real interest in lifelong learning. And I think we're coming to a point where we have to really seriously consider that if you've worked in a physical job, that by the time you're 45 to 50, you really have to retrain. And we're really going to have to get serious about this and look at how do we, if we're expecting people then to work for another 15 to 20 years, how are we really going to support them to retrain? Now, obviously, volunteering is a great way. We often see volunteering as a pathway to employment. But I also think it's a really important opportunity for those people who have been in the paid workforce and have got fantastic skills to then give back to the community.
Of course, we would hope that many people who go through redundancy, say in their 40s and 50s, will get work. But when people do come to retirement, there could still be another 20 or 30 years to give back to the community.
Certainly, and that's definitely sure. I think the bigger issues here is about well-being and resilience. I think redundancy can be a very, very stressful time for someone, particularly if you've been in a role for a very long period of time. Now, a few generations, you know, people that are a few years younger often have had several employers and maybe have to have been a bit more flexible in moving between different jobs. But, you know, there are a lot of people who have been in the same occupation for a long time, and it's quite a shock if you're made redundant, or you might find it very difficult, as we see in our manufacturing sector, where there are simply less jobs in that field. So one of the areas I think is really important is building on people's confidence, on their well-being and their resilience to say, look, this has happened, so what else is out there for you? Now, whether that's volunteering or whether that's retraining into a different field. I think that places in the north here, like Northern Futures, they talk to people a bit more holistically. They're not a job network agency. They're actually about supporting people getting back into employment.
Several quite important themes have emerged during this project. For instance, the role of neighbourhood houses and community centres and of the growing men's shed movement around Australia. These provide safe places for men in retirement.
Look, just last week I was at the Ceduna Men's Shed. Ceduna, for those of you not from South Australia, is in our west coast, so it's in a regional area. And I said, you know, you go to the men's shed for a spot of welding, some woodwork and a cup of tea. And I had some great conversations with people there. And they said, really, they go to hang out and they go to talk. And I think we have this kind of traditional view that men will go to the front bar at a pub and hang out. And really, that's probably only a small proportion of our population that was the norm. And often people find, particularly if they've come off the farm, they might have come off the farm in their 50s, progressing to the next generation. Then they might have had a job in the city, but they're very good with their hands. And they like to talk about practical things. And so the men's shed is an ideal movement to have the practical option to do some things, but really it's about well-being.
Of course, men's sheds are not just in country areas. In our program last week, we picked up on one that's very close to here, and that's the Paraka men's shed.
That's the thing, and I think we've seen the proliferation of these men's sheds. And I guess culturally in Australia, we often don't talk about our feelings. I think both men and women, but particularly men, and that transition into retirement can be quite difficult. The other thing is when you have life events, if you lose a partner or a relationship breaks up, or sometimes if you've gone through a bit of a health scare, these can be times where you feel quite vulnerable and you reach out. And so it's often having that community of people that you see on a regular basis, not just your own family, but in the men's shed, these people that you see perhaps on a weekly basis, they provide that extra support for you.
As a community, we sometimes need to remember that things can go very wrong in retirement. And I'm thinking particularly of things like financial abuse or, for instance, the loss of a partner, as you've just mentioned, or, for instance, having to take on the role of carer, say, for a grandchild. Things don't always work out as one plans.
I think everyone's retirement is different. And I think that obviously when life events happen, then you have to readjust your thinking and feeling. And I know often how people work together as a couple. My own parents have always spent a lot of time together. We had a family business. So that was quite normal for them. But I know in other couples, when particularly the male might have gone off and worked out at the home, been away a lot, and then suddenly they're at home, it's a real change to the family dynamic. So then when you take on perhaps extra caring duties, whether it be grandchildren or your spouse, that also changes the dynamic as well.
Earlier we were talking about resilience, and this is what we're on about now. And I'm also reminded of the importance of that mentoring role for men, for older men, either within the workforce or with younger men, including their own grandchildren. So that intergenerational learning seems to me to be pretty important.
Look, I think it's fundamental to our community. We tend to get, I guess, very inward-looking about our own age and our views on things. And I think often you can learn so much from people who've had life experience. And so while they've got a lot of practical skills to teach you, they've also seen a lot of life. And I'm very fortunate to have my son, who's 4, and very close to his pop, who he follows around. My dad's a very practical man. He's always doing something in his shed. And my son just loves that. And he just watches what he does and follows. And that connection is just priceless. But often there's many different ways, particularly if you want to engage. Here in Salisbury, we have our 1225 centre. One of the ways older people have engaged is through our driver's licensing volunteers. One of the barriers to many young people getting work is them not having their driver's license. Now, if you're a new arrival or if your family doesn't have a car, it's very hard for you to get experience as a driver if someone's still on their probationary license. You actually need a full license holder. So there's a program at the 1225 Centre in Salisbury where people volunteer to actually take people out and help them get their driver's licence. And that's an ideal mentoring role.
This project was made possible with a grant from the Office for the Ageing through the Positive Ageing Grant Scheme, and we really appreciate this. We're looking at creative male ageing, in other words, making the absolute most of this time of life.
Look, what we have is a triumph of civilization. We have 30 years of our life that we really haven't had before, and we're just at the start of talking about what does that mean? How do you engage while there might be some financial considerations because you might have some super and will that last that long period of time? But more importantly, I think we're just at the start of discussing what does this mean? You know, we've got University of the Third Age. I think the question is, what interests me? Whether you're a younger person or an older person, it's a question we have to say, what's important to me to be included in our social life? Because the worst thing we want is people staying at home, not getting out there, not engaging with the wider community. But look, I think that we're just at the start of this discussion. A lot of it comes down to the individual and their confidence about how they where they fit into the community. And I guess for me, adult community education through community centres or neighbourhood centres is sometimes that first step for people to re-engage at a different stage in their life.
Minister, it's been a pleasure talking to you. And again, we appreciate the support of the Office for the Ageing for this project. Thank you.
Lovely to talk to you, Tony.
The Honourable Zoe Bettison, MP, Minister for Ageing in South Australia. I've also been speaking with Dr. Miles Groth, Professor of Psychology at Wagner College in New York, Professor Barry Golding from Federation University in Ballarat, Australia, Dr. Anthony Brown, Secretary of the Men's Health Forum in Sydney, and Dr. John Ashfield, South Australian-based psychotherapist, author and educator. And Dr. Ashfield is also the project consultant for Creative Male Ageing. On our website, you will find much information about the themes of these 12 programs and also each of the 12 programs as podcasts. creativemaleaging.com. This Aspects of Ageing project was made possible with assistance from the Office for the Ageing, Department of Health, the Government of South Australia. From PBAFM in Adelaide, I'm Tony Ryan. Thanks for being with me for these programs. Go well.